everyone, and welcome to Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. I'm Rosemary Truman, founder and CEO of the Center for Advancing Innovation, and I am thrilled to have Keith Marmer, the Executive Director and Associate Vice President of the Center for Technology and Venture Commercialization at the University of Utah on. Keith has 30 years of experience as an investor, an inventor, an entrepreneur. He has patents. He's launched 4 companies and helped entrepreneurs raise more than $500 million in capital. He's also an avid skier and hiker in Utah. So welcome, Keith. I'm thrilled to have you on.
Thanks, Rosemary. Excited to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Yeah. So Keith, why don't you tell me, how did you get into tech transfer?
Largely by accident. My background was an entrepreneur, had started grown a couple of companies, and after my last company, literally got a call out of the clear blue from my alma mater to ask, would I be interested in being a professor of entrepreneurship? And for some reason, I said, sure, sounds fun, and quickly found I'm definitely more of a practitioner and need to be very hands-on, and was about to leave the university when the dean and the president of the university said, we'd really love to, you know, figure out a way to keep you here. And so they began crafting a position largely under the auspices of business development. And one of these small little things that they put on my job list was technology transfer. And I'd never heard of it before, had no idea what it was. And literally overnight was just so taken by it and threw myself at it, trying to learn everything I could about it, and haven't really looked back since.
Well, that's pretty cool. Actually, I was talking to Kathy Q the other day, and she said exactly the same thing. She said she was in a boring job, and she just fell into this tech transfer area, and it was interesting every single day. It was interesting, all these new inventions to learn about.
Yeah, I think the way I describe it best is, for someone like me, I have sort of an entrepreneurial ADD. And so the ability to, you know, work in one company and one thing and be passionate and grow it was great for me. And I did that for almost 20 years. But in the tech transfer world, you get to see new things literally every hour. Mm-hmm. And you can be a part of it. And, you know, it's, you're not leading it or driving it, but there are so many facets and you get to meet so many incredible people and work on so many cutting edge innovations and then figure out how to put all the puzzle pieces together as part of a team. That to me is what gets me out of bed every day, because it's always going to be something new and exciting that you get to be a part of.
Yes. I feel the same way. I dream in inventions.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I dream in inventions. And you're kind of like the nucleus, right? So you're the, because you have to have the inventor, the investors on one side, the mentors, the rest of the team players, you know, bringing them all together. It's very exciting.
Exactly, exactly. And a lot of folks don't know each other. They don't know they need to know each other.
Right.
And there's sort of a just-in-time aspect of it as well that keeps you on your toes.
Well, I am a little bit remiss right now. I have about 150 intros I have to make for our two challenges. We're running the SCALE challenge, stands for Supply Chain and Logistics Enterprises, and also the Brain Race. And what we do is we connect all of our teams up with investors, you know, before the end of the challenge so that they can start having their conversations. But so, yes, I know all about that. So, you know, in your dream world, what would you say tech transfer looks like?
Oh, in a dream world, I think one of the first things I'd start with is changing the name of it. I think technology transfer is just a term we've all gotten used to, but haven't really thought about the fact that while technology transfer has morphed multiple times over the last 20 years or more, we still refer to it as tech transfer as opposed to something like innovation management or something that is more descriptive. And I think one of the reasons in a dream world I'd want to change it is so many people who seek to interact with us or resist interacting with us in the tech transfer community do so because of this notion that it's a transactional, bureaucratic engagement when the point of fact is, I think in the current world or you know, sort of the dream world, what we're really talking about is collaborating to have impact. And most of the people I know who work in the tech transfer space, whether it's on the university side, the industry side, investors, entrepreneurs, we all sort of have that common bond. And so the focus on moving beyond the transactional component to really look at our world as catalyzing relationships as the first and foremost aspect of what we do. And by building those relationships and those bonds and using innovation as a framework for it, that we can put together these things that we call startups or deals or joint ventures, because it isn't just about licensing a patent anymore. Most of us are doing so much more than licensing patents. It's become on a percentage basis, a much smaller aspect of what we do day in and day out. So thinking about this innovation management infrastructure where, it, again, I'm repeating, but those relationships being at the fore to drive value, to have impact.
So tell me about the range of innovation management activities that you do. I mean, we've just talked about the bond making, the creation, the catalyzing the bonds, which is super critical. I mean, we take all of our startup teams and connect them with mentors. And every single day I get text messages or emails saying, thank you so much for connecting me with that mentor. Perfect fit, right? So I love hearing that. What is the breadth of activities that you manage?
Sure. It's probably too long a list to sort of just enumerate, but broadly speaking, I think that there's obviously, again, going back to the traditional, we manage hundreds of patents and licenses, and we start a lot of new companies, but it's thinking about it more of a long-term relationship or longitudinally speaking, that we don't consider our job done when the company is launched and they've either graduated a 12-week program or we sign a license agreement. We find that we are defining success, again, in terms of value creation and impact. And so value creation tends to connote more of a monetary notion. Certainly that's a part of it, right? So we're staying engaged and creating programs and catalyzing relationships over the lifetime of our portfolio companies. And certainly part of that is in order to have revenue recognition. But it's also in order to have impact in terms of societally. You know, I think tech transfer, in the traditional sense, was oftentimes not wholly integrated into the common narrative of a university. And I think at Utah and what I'm seeing some of my colleagues at some other institutions really doing is thinking about what is the mission of the university and how do we better align ourselves? And a lot of that is on impact, right? So it's no secret that you know, engaging students as interns in our office is a longstanding practice, but how do we help them sort of migrate into becoming entrepreneurs or becoming part of entrepreneurial companies or work with investment firms? And so there's sort of this more holistic meshing that seems to be going on across the university mission. So I find myself at any given day in meetings on workforce development, state economic development, venture capital, because we're raising a venture fund, but more of a traditional institutional venture fund where we're again taking on less traditional roles in catalyzing these activities, these programs, these behaviors. And so to call that tech transfer is sort of a hard thing to wrap your head around. And I guess, you know, I've been trying to explain to my dad what I do for over
My mom doesn't know what I do either.
Yeah, I figure if I'm still failing at it, I don't know how I'm going to describe it quickly here either.
So it's like you're a catalyst, but you're also galvanizing. It's like,
absolutely. You know,
it's so interesting because it's two motions that are opposite one another to a certain extent.
Yeah. I mean, I've
complementary.
I've described before, like a lot of the things that we're expected to do or responsible for are in tension with one another. And I think of it as a healthy tension, mm-hmm. And a necessary tension, but figuring out how to integrate these pieces and sort of break down the barriers is critical for us to have the impact and build these relationships.
So I guess those are the differentiators for a good tech transfer. Let's not use tech transfer. Innovation management office. I mean, the differentiators are looking at impact in multiple different ways and then working backwards from how you actually get there. Would you say that's a fair statement?
I would say it's certainly a fair statement for us here at the U. I'm sensitive to and have learned both from working at a couple of other universities in similar roles, as well as because this, it's not a competitive industry. We're
friends.
Also colleagues and friends. And so there's this desire to learn from each other and employ best practices and what have you done and how do I do it? But I think that what I've also sort of grasped is you've got to be able to take the learnings and the experience of things that work well, but stitch it together for your own ecosystem. There's a difference between what will work in a public university versus a private university, or something in a rural university versus a urban-based university. And then there's also the culture. You know, mm-hmm. I come from the East Coast where the culture is very different than it is in the Mountain West, mm-hmm. and fitting a program, tailoring a program or a strategy so that it's positively accepted, it's reinforcing and driving the behavior and the outcome that you desire. So you can't just sort of take a one-size-fits-all approach. So the difference between the catalyzing, the galvanizing, and when I look, and even I've had this conversation with Kathy. She was at Stanford. You know, they don't have to be intentional about new venture creation at Stanford because they're in the Bay Area, and VCs sort of roam the halls a little bit more than they do at most.
They do.
Whereas here in Utah, you know, I think one of the things we have a history and a legacy for is being very intentional in our startups. But even if you look at the phases of that growth over 20 years of being intentional with startups, I would tell you in the last 20 years, we're now probably in our third iteration or strategy because, you know, early on it was how many startups can you create?
Right.
Then it's how many programs can you create to foster startups? Now it's, let's not worry about how many startups we create, but how many startups are creating value.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't sustain 20 startups a year that are all creating value, maybe you should focus on the programs that help create value and the numbers will take care of themselves.
Right.
And I think that's where we find ourselves now.
Yeah, we found exactly the same thing. So as you know, we have this challenge model. We started out creating 10 companies. We're in our eighth challenge. And last year we blew the socks off. We did 100 companies.
Wow.
So we scaled from 10 to 100, and it's almost like having 100 babies. But it was hard. And I don't think it was very good either because we couldn't nurture them as
right.
well. And so this year 40 is really a good number unless I scale my company further. But we're still scaling the number of inventions we work with because then we have more of a pool. But I totally agree with you. It's quality, not quantity.
Yeah.
It's always quality, not quantity.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I'm just agreeing with you. So just to kind of recap, the differentiators for a good tech transfer office are that, you know, all about value creation, and all about really the whole cycle. It's not just you do the deal, you monitor if they make money, you collect the money, but you're in there and making sure that they can create value because you're monitoring them and helping them as they go along. Well, what other differentiators do you think are important for a tech transfer office?
I think it's a lot of it starts with the people that you have in the office. A lot of what we do can't be overlooked. It has to be based on trust in the relationship with our faculty members because they're the innovators. Mm-hmm. We're catalyzing innovation. We're not innovating in and out of ourselves within the tech transfer office. Mm-hmm. And so I take it from the point of my own experience as being an inventor. You have to trust other people, right? And you talked about it's like having 100 babies, right?
Yeah.
And so in tech transfer, you know, faculty are trusting you with their baby.
Yeah.
Or not trusting you with their baby.
That's right.
And yeah. So it's super important that you have people that are working every day to build that trust, whether it's making sure a contract got out the door, or a payment for a royalty got made, or just frankly communicating. It comes down to you want to know what's going on with your baby. You know, you do get babysitters, but you want a babysitter to tell you what's going on, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to come home and hope that all worked out, right?
Yeah.
So I think getting the right people, and I also think that's changed over time, where there used to be sort of a focus around technical expertise in the sciences, and you had a lot more folks with law degrees because it was contract heavy. Mm-hmm. I think you're finding folks we're breaking down not only to have more varied backgrounds, people with entrepreneurial experience, investor experience, biz dev, industry experience in the office, so that you have more of a team as opposed to sort of this one individual that makes all the decisions, but mm-hmm. may not have the experience, which leads to maybe questions around, is the right person taking care of my baby, right? Mm-hmm. So it's become a lot more complex to manage those relationships as you bring more people onto the team to interact with the faculty. I think a good tech transfer office has to be sensitive to the fact that you have to communicate, why are we doing this? Why are we bringing all these people in to support this? And again, I always tie it back to the value creation mm-hmm. and the relationship required to do that. So the people, I think some offices are wrestling with being caught between providing a service function, a compliance function mm-hmm. versus revenue function. I remember when I was being recruited, I asked the president when I was being interviewed, so what's my job?
And
you sort of get the answer you would think. Well, we want, first and foremost, service to the faculty is important. We want to make sure that you're supporting them, but we expect the office to make money. And, you know, increasingly I find when I talk to my colleagues that that's true. Rightly or wrongly, because most tech transfer offices lose money. We're probably in a small minority of offices that historically has generated a profit over time. Excuse me. And it's not easy and largely beyond your control, right? Because mm-hmm. we're providing a lot more support, but it's ultimately the leadership teams of these companies and market forces that decide whether you're going to get a return on the royalties and the equity that you have. Mm-hmm. So that's where I see us becoming more proactive and then taking this broader team to be more proactive again, to maybe put more resources to fewer opportunities, which makes us somewhat unpopular when you've got somebody who's saying to you, my baby is going to be the best baby ever. And, you know, all of the diligence that you do and you talk to the investor community, you do the market analysis, we're going to be wrong sometimes. There's no doubt we're going to be wrong sometimes. But we have scarcity of resources. We don't have massive budgets to be able to make the investments that every opportunity would otherwise need to give it the best chance of success. And so as hard a message as that is to deliver, I think more tech transfer offices are finding themselves in this challenging intersection between trying to provide really great support and service and create new programs with somewhat unfunded mandates or underfunded mandates, and likewise be in the position of helping folks understand this wonderfully amazing technology that just came in the door that's going to save lives, this new drug, isn't going to hit the market for 12 years.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's a reality, right?
Yeah. And so it's so complex. So many parts. Getting better at telling our story is also part of being a better tech transfer office.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what's key, especially the life sciences, is to set expectations that, you know, it's 12 to 15 years is their therapeutic if it's for adults, depending upon if it's for, you know, an orphan indication. And then, you know, there's a 95% failure rate.
Right.
So yeah. Even if you get 8 years in, it could still, you know, die, sadly.
Yeah. And it's a long time. There are a lot of moving parts to it. And even really promising drugs get shelved through no fault of their own, just because it's great science, but the economics don't support bringing it into a phase two or a phase three trial sometime.
Right.
And so we're also finding ourselves, I find increasingly playing the role of educator. Yet another reason and reinforcement for why we've changed the model of our staffing. Mm-hmm. We not only have all of those skill sets, but we outsource. We have three separate programs for an executive in residence, an entrepreneur in residence, a mentor in residence. We use outsourcing more and more frequently to bring deeper domain expertise to not only guide the particular commercialization strategy, but also to help educate so that we're not only making decisions on this technology, but what I find is most valuable is, can we help a faculty member to inform their research platform so that as they continue to go down the road, we should be further and further upstream, really helping to provide that information, that education, that network effect, so that we're not reacting to a new invention that comes over the wall, but we're really, I don't want to oversimplify it to say we're embedded in the lab, but that we are seen as a resource for the researcher long before the discovery, helping to inform,
right,
shape and guide some of the behavior. If they want to go to the translational path for their research, it helps to know that a regulatory path will be easier followed by doing research study this way versus that way.
Yes. Yeah, that's very good. So you're guiding them as they go along so that they're not making a decision that would cause their invention to be shelved.
Exactly.
Recently, Milken did a interesting, they did the global conference and it was in LA. And I was kindly invited to the Invisible Hand small group meeting. And these were executives, investors, executives, you know, like Rory Vance, you know, the whole nine yards where people were there. So I felt very honored to be able to attend. But the interesting question that they asked was, you know, we have all these inventions sitting on the shelf. They weren't referring to universities and hospitals and federal labs. They were referring to companies that have shelved inventions. And so after that, I went, and my team and I worked up an estimate of how much per year is shelved. You know, what's the amount of money that we could say that it's, what is it that, or at least the inventions equate to amount of money? And so at $300 to $400 billion a year shelved by companies. We had to triangulate it lots of different ways because the data was poor. But if we're half right, you know, it's still big. You know, still a big number. So, so you have you made some adjustments as you have come into the university?
we've made lots of adjustments. There's certainly been adjustments in terms of how we've staffed the office. I'd say we've made adjustments in terms of just the metrics and the goals that we value. I know I've had a lot of conversations, including with Ross Duvall, who used to be at Milken.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome.
He was great.
On one of my podcasts.
Yeah, I noticed.
He was like my second or third one.
He's great. I mean, he just has such an amazing perspective and wealth.
Thought leader.
Wealth of information. That, you know, again, 10, 20 years ago, we were counting how many patents. And the truth of the matter is, when you look at universities, it's fascinating to me when you look at the size of a patent budget for every university and how they're funded. And it's not to say that you can arbitrarily just get more and more patents just because you have more money. There's got to be clearly a cadre of innovative folks doing great work, as I find there are at virtually every university, right? But there's also the inverse, where you've got great innovators and a de minimis patent budget. And so one of the adjustments that I came into was my very first board meeting. I was told, you know, your patent budget, you know, we'd like to understand, we think you may be spending too much money on patents year after year. And, you know, my feedback was, well, maybe we're spending too much, maybe we're spending too little. What are we doing to make good decisions, right? So it's moving people off of the budget to how do we spend, you know, how do we make decisions?
That's right.
And so the vetting, the diligence, the rigor, the transparency and all of that, those were all adjustments that we've had to make quite significantly. And it's not like you just flip a switch one day, right? It's taken us literally getting around conference room tables. And we probably spent 2 years, my first 2 years here, where we had working groups and we literally dissected down to what I call the DNA level, every aspect of what we do. And, you know, in operations where it's highly process driven, I would infuriate my team because I would say, well, on what basis are you making this decision? And it was, well, the process goes from A to B to C. I said, I don't care what A to B to C, how do you get from A to B before you even worry about C? You know, what are the factors you're considering? Where's the data to support
you? Right. Oh and my so gosh.
You just...
The same way.
Those are huge adjustments that we've been making. And I'd also say a lot of the other adjustments, more sort of externally facing, we in tech transfer get a bad rap for taking a long time with contracts and negotiating things and so on and so forth. And so like a lot of schools, we went through the exercise of just adjusting how we think about those things. What's important to us, what's not. Letting the market set the terms and things of that nature. So a really long distributed answer, but lots of adjustments, and we'll probably continue to make them as we learn from them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we've gone through many, many licensing groups because of the fact that all of our companies are licensing for the most part. And it's really important to think about what's going to make a material impact and what's not, because the terms could change, you know, later when there is a material impact. So for example, D&O insurance for a startup, that's ridiculous. Oh my gosh. I could start going into nitty gritty details too, especially with the due diligence process. So I love where you're going. Beautiful. So what does the future hold?
I think the future for us is largely around execution and learning and continuing to refine our approaches. I talked about the relationship piece of it, but, you know, one of the better ways to grow and succeed in relationships is to deliver on what you say you're going to do. And it's hard to keep all the balls in the air in a tech transfer office on any given day. We don't tend to have robust systems to support us. We don't tend to invest in data analytics and things of that nature. So those are two areas we're very focused on right now. We're actually going through a pretty significant infrastructure build out to create a platform to support our operation end to end, not just, you know, the patent management, the license management. There are tools there, but a fully integrated solution. And we're still trying to figure that out, what that is. It's a project we started about 18 months ago, and I suspect has at least another 18 years or 18 months rather. Another 18 months. And so that's a big piece of where we're at. You know, talent for our startups is another big area for us. I mentioned we're launching a $60 million venture fund. And, you know, when I was presenting to our board for approval, I said, please don't think of this as an investment fund where we'll put some money in, others put money in, because we're going to make lots of money. I said, really, the primary focus is talent attraction and capital attraction. Because you know, there's not a lot of early stage capital in our region, it's hard sometimes to get really talented people, whether they're local or somewhere else, to engage at the earliest stages when we really need the talent the most. Mm-hmm. So being able to have resources is a big one. That's something I'm very focused on. You know, I think good deals always find money. You know, it's an axiom that's been in our space for a long time. And I think that will continue to hold true. But being able to bring some capital to bear on the talent attraction, we spent about a year plus talking to investors and entrepreneurs in our region and beyond. And that was a consistent message we heard, that if you can bring the capital just enough to really seed these companies and get the right talent at the earliest stages, you'll mitigate some of these downstream frustrations. You'll be more attractive to investors regardless of where they are in the world. So those are a few areas that we're really focused on. And I also think, because, you know, we're a comprehensive research university, we were just invited into the AAU earlier this year. We're excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And that's all the credit to our president. She was focused on that for several years and did just incredible work telling our story and getting the academic community to really appreciate the great things going on in Utah. But we also then have to recognize that commercializing a drug is not the same as commercializing a sensor. And so what I'm finding is, we're creating a lot of specialized programs and support structures that are domain specific. So a lot of things we've been doing and that the future holds for us, for example, we just launched an orthopedics accelerator, very focused on orthopedic medical devices. We hope to, in the first quarter of 2020, do something similar where we're going to make a very sizable investment in therapeutics accelerator. We're launching a new incubator in partnership with a large company here in Utah. And so doing a lot of those things where we can bring the specific talent and resources to bear that are domain specific. And what we find is it really resonates, and the connectivity, the relationships, the resources. And I do think that's probably more of what we're seeing now across the country, and we'll continue to see more of in tech transfer.
Yeah, that's exactly what we had to do with our accelerator program. We had to have paths, because even the diagnostics devices, regulatory path for all three of them are so different. And it's not useful for the person who's developing the therapeutic necessarily to understand the diagnostic, unless it's a companion diagnostic. And, you know, it's really interesting. You talk about the system, the underlying system. We did a project for the NIH. When I first really understood what tech transfer was, and we worked for 2 weeks just on the data, like all the transactions that ever have occurred at the NIH ever. And, you know, which ones are driving the most value. And, you know, it was really an interesting exercise. So I can't wait to hear what happens with your technology infrastructure there. And you know, we spend also a lot of time on talent. I mean, we, for these inventions sitting on the shelf that we have, like when there could have been just one person working on this invention or no one working on the invention, we try to put, you know, in the challenge at the beginning, about 100 people on the invention. So it's nice to see all the different ideas. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to do a plug about your conference coming up, Bio Utah, February 28th and 29th. Everybody should go, right?
Everybody should go. Thank you. Yes. So it's our annual Entrepreneur and Investor Summit. TVC, our shop, co-hosts it with Bio Utah. And it is obviously targeted to the life sciences, as you would guess, since we co-host with Bio Utah. We actually, over 3 days, cover a lot of ground. And so the first day is we do a boot camp for new entrepreneurs that we partner with some outside firms to work with us on. We also do, for our academic community, we do a translational medicine symposium. Get a lot of folks coming out for that. So those are two tracks that take place on the first day. Then the investors and entrepreneurs start coming into town, and we do a great networking dinner where everybody, cocktail reception and dinner where we're hoping to make collisions. Day two is a traditional conference that includes speakers, panels, and a pitch day. And it's really a great opportunity for investors to see what's going on in Utah and the surrounding region. We've got so much going on here, too much to describe in the story. And then we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't have a ski day.
Yes. So excellent.
So we bring everybody up to Deer Valley, and we try and get as many deals going on chairlifts as we can. And do a great
I love it.
As well. So
wonderful.
Yeah, there's information on the TVC website and on the Bio Utah website. It's the E&I Summit. It's definitely something everybody should check out. It's not to be missed.
Well, you're invited to our investor forum in Northwest Arkansas if you'd like to go, April 3rd. Awesome. It'll be fun. It's going to be at this museum called the Momentary.
I've been there. It's fabulous. I'm so excited that you're hosting it there.
Oh, cool. Anything else you want to leave people with today?
I think more that, you know, so much has changed in tech transfer, just to bring it back full circle, particularly here at the U, that, you know, we want to engage, and there's so many ways that we can engage. And so more of an invitation, I would say.
Excellent.
And we also, we want to give back as well. So if we can be helpful to your audience, we get a lot of calls. Can you help us? Can you explain to us? Can we visit? We're so open to that and excited to be able to share what we're doing, because it not only helps us meet new people and be supportive of our community, we learn a ton from that as well. And a lot of the things that we're incorporating, we're not invented here. We're shamelessly benefiting from a lot of other people's great ideas.
Well, I just want to thank you very, very much for your time and this amazing conversation. So much value that came out of this. I know that the listeners are going to probably have to listen to it a few times, and have a wonderful holiday.
Thanks, you as well. Thanks so much for having me. This has been great fun.
You're welcome. Take care.